Our purpose is to help build a bridge between the people of Oregon and southwestern Washington and the Chinese.
There are more people in China curious what's going on here.
We have become, the United States, the fourth largest investors in China by the end of last year. And I see nothing but a continued upward trend.
The complex relationship between America and China on this edition of Common Ground. Common Ground is a program on world affairs and the people who shape events. It's produced by the Stanley Foundation. I'm Keith Porter. What images come to mind when you think of China? Giant pandas and the Great Wall? Prison labor in Tiananmen Square? Or perhaps burgeoning capitalism with 1 billion potential consumers? Well, these images and thousands more contribute to our feelings and our official policies toward China. This week on Common Ground, we're joined by three people who've been trying to build citizen-to-citizen contacts between Americans and Chinese. Among them are Kung Li Wong, founder of the Organization of Chinese Americans and the Committee of 100, and Professor George Yu, director of the Center for East Asian and Pacific Studies at the University of Illinois. First, we hear from Jane Lung Larson, Executive Director of the Northwest Regional China Council. She describes the affinity felt between the Chinese and the Americans.
I think it's a historical affinity, going back as long as our history, in fact, in the United States. And, of course, there's been a lot of Chinese immigration to the United States, so particularly in the West, I think the Chinese have a lot of personal contacts with ordinary Americans or European Americans. I know in our organization, which is the Northwest China Council in Portland, although the percentage of the Chinese population in Oregon is not terribly high, the connections people have with China or their interests in China are extremely diverse. And they range from people who had lived in China before 49 as missionaries or business people or army or government, to people who've traveled to China over the years. Many people are involved in business at this point. And then there have been contacts in many other ways from Chinese students studying in the United States and so on. So I think the person-to-person relationship has been very strong, particularly on the West Coast.
Mr. Wang, do you agree with that?
I agree with it. I think there's a U.S. American has a always treat Chinese as a friend. I mean, I think once they get to know us, but there's no question there are people in the States that are anti-Asians. I mean, but that is different of economic concern and so forth like that. But China as a whole, I mean, there is affinity toward China.
And Mr. Yu?
Oh, yes, I would definitely say, both from the contemporary point of view and from the historical, there's tremendous feelings of Americans for the Chinese. And I think, though there are pockets of sectors in the American public that might not be as enthused, but by and large, the feelings are very, very good. And this has always been so. It has gone up and down depending upon the times. For example, there was a period after 89 when Americans were rather taken back by the events of that year. But I think we have since recovered from that low point, and I think American Chinese relations between people to people have been restored.
Okay. Well, before we go any farther, I would like to ask about your organizational memberships and have Ms. Larson first tell us about the Northwest Regional Council and the activities of the council and why it was formed.
Well, it was formed through the Asia Society as one of 12 regional China councils back in 1980. Since that time, the other China councils, for the most part, don't exist. We became an independent organization in 87. Our purpose is to help build a bridge between the people of Oregon and southwestern Washington and the Chinese. And our activities encompass everything from lectures and symposia and conferences to tours, exhibits, exchanges, and so on, relating in every way to China, from Chinese culture to politics to business, including Chinese American history and Taiwan, Hong Kong, China relations, and so on.
All right. And Mr. Wang, you are director of the Committee of 100. Tell us about the role that it plays in the relationship between the American people and the Chinese.
Well, first of all, I think Committee 100 is a very small group, and our purpose of two. One is to try to strive for the civil rights for the Chinese American in this country. This is where we work networking with other Chinese American, Asian American groups to work on that. And another is to serve as a bridge between the Chinese people and the American people. And in that way, that we feel that there's a role that we can play because we are well known. Many of us are well known in China and as well in the United States, and I think is that we will be able to, when we go to China, when they talk with them, they will be able to think that at least that we are the people that are well get into the mainstream, and they also will be respect our opinion, and then that's why we feel that as a group that we probably can able to convey ourselves what we think. That may be able to cannot talk in the public, but they will be able to listen.
Mm-hmm. And these are all Chinese Americans?
These are all Chinese Americans, yeah.
And Mr. Yu, the center at the University of Illinois?
Oh, well, I'm the director of the Center for East Asia and Pacific Studies at the University of Illinois. We have had this center since 65, and the university is committed to giving as broad and as comprehensive and as deep an educational program to the citizens of Illinois as we can. And as a result, we offer a number of majors in all of the social sciences and the humanities. We conduct a number of exchange programs, and we also get the colleges of business, agriculture, engineering involved in specific programs for their students. So by and large, I can say we have a very comprehensive program dealing with Asia and with China, Japan, Korea. So we are doing our role, I think, in terms of educating the future leaders of the state of Illinois as well as the United States.
Well, it's interesting then that around the table that we have a number of different societal connections represented. And I want to go farther into that and say that there are a number of Chinese issues that seem to trouble Americans. Human rights, the nuclear testing, even the limited economic successes they've had without democratic reforms, all of them seem to cause some problems, at least for the American leadership, but for the American people as well. So if we all agree that there is at least some societal affinity between the Americans and the Chinese, but then we also have these troubling issues, it seems to me that we're left then with a public that's somewhat confused and not sure exactly what to think about the Chinese and about what U.S. policy should be. Do you think that that confusion, those torn feelings do exist, and what can we do about it? Ms. Larson?
Well, I can't say that I notice that much concern. There is concern amongst the public that I deal with. Of course, it's a public that has a special affinity and interest in China. I think they have perhaps a broader point of view and a clearer perspective of the Chinese situation than probably the average person, because they have a strong interest in this field. I think a lot of the problems that the U.S. government is facing now with China are more provoked through domestic politics than even by public opinion, that certain interest groups and so on have more influence in Congress than do the average persons, as well as particularly the people that are most involved with China on every level, such as the people that are our memberships.
Mr. Yu, do you have a comment on this idea that the American public is confused, that they see some things they like, they have the affinity, but then they also have some very troubling issues that they try to deal with?
Well, there is no doubt that there is a whole range of issues that exist between China and the United States. But I would say that basically the Americans I have encountered with, they are very curious about China, but they have also shown a greater understanding and awareness of China. Take the issue of human rights. We have a very narrow definition in this country, emphasizing the individuality in terms of the freedom of expression, freedom of organization. Now, there is nothing wrong with that interpretation, and we certainly should hold dear to the values that we have held. But on the other hand, I think more and more Americans are also coming around to the basic needs approach to human rights, namely taking care of a basic a shelter, basic clothing, and the basic food needs. And I think if we, and many Americans are starting to broaden the definition of human rights and understanding the economic, social background of China, there is a greater understanding as to what China is, and I think this understanding will continue to expand, and therefore it will also contribute to greater understanding.
Mm-hmm. If Americans' understanding of human rights does broaden, that still wouldn't necessarily lessen our concern about the denial of human rights in the political sector as well.
Oh, no, absolutely not. And we should never compromise our values. We hope that the China will also expand their definition of human rights. Certainly, I would certainly hope so.
We're talking in this edition of Common Ground about the relationship between China and America. Our guests are Jane Lung Larson of the Northwest Regional China Council, Kung Li Wang of the Organization of Chinese Americans, and George Yu of the University of Illinois. Common Ground is a service of the Stanley Foundation, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that conducts a wide range of programs meant to provoke thought and encourage dialogue on world affairs. I'm wondering about the Chinese students who come to the United States. A number of them do. When they return, what effect has their time in the U.S. Had on them? And can we expect any changes as more and more Chinese students who studied in the U.S. rise to positions of power? Will their feelings, their relationship with the U.S. change their political positions at all? Does anyone have an opinion on that?
Well, if I can just comment first, in broad historical terms, China has had long experiences with returned Chinese students, starting at the turn of the century. First, large numbers went to the Tokyo-Yokohama area. They came here, they went to Europe, they took part in the early Chinese Revolution, and you saw a continuous stream in the 1920s, 30s, and so forth. Even after the formation of the People's Republic in 1949, large number of Chinese students went to the Soviet Union, and they had an impact upon their return. Large numbers since the 70s, 80s have come from China to the United States, and some have gone back. Others may go back in the future, and these people have all returned to the positions of some responsibilities. And though the impact is slow, one cannot say that it hasn't had an impact in raising the educational and other standards which the People's Republic now enjoy. So my conclusion on the macro and both the micro level is that there has been an impact, and the impact has been for good. It is more obviously clear on the economic level, in the economic sector. But in other sectors, political or social, though we may not be able to see it, they may not be as, shall we say, obvious as we would like, I would say there will be long-term consequences.
Anyone else have a comment on students?
Well, I agree with George on this issue. I mean, I think it's that there is no question that they will have, they bring back what they have learned and saw in this country. And also that the way that we run the government and so forth like that. On the hand, there's no question they also see the crime that we have in this country and all the some of the bad things that we have in this country. So all I mean, there's no question they're bringing back what they learn and what they see in this country, and there are more people in China curious what's going on here. I mean, they also see it on TV and right now in China, the hottest thing is to have a little ear. I mean, this is they can get the television signals from CNN and so forth like that.
The hottest thing is to have a what?
Have a little ear, the telescope to be able to get the foreign the
satellite.
TV satellite.
A satellite.
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 That is very. I mean, I'm surprised that it's more common in a way. It's no longer. It's a restricted area. There are a lot of people are getting them. I mean, so these are the things that then, and also in the past, that I know in the last 10 years or so, I mean, usually on their evening news, they usually have one section of a foreign news, which is maybe from BBC or even from NBC, ABC, and also from Europe. I mean, this is in a way they are exposing to the Chinese public many things what's going on outside the world. I think all these things, as well what the student brought back, and also there's a great number of government officials and also the state enterprises, so forth like that, and they're sending their delegation to this country to learn for a visit, and they are bringing back some of this, what they saw to China too. So I think in the long run, this will promote better understanding between the Chinese people and the United States.
All right. Ms. Larson, do you have a comment?
I'd like to say one thing. I think at this point it seems to me that relatively few students and scholars have gone back. Many more have stayed, probably. And some of those have now gained profession. They've finished school. They've gotten hired by law firms and accounting firms, and they're even in U.S. government, I suppose. And I think those people, many of whom are still very involved with China, are having an influence perhaps beyond that of those who have returned to China and are trying to sort of work within because they have more flexibility. I just think of situations. We have a sister state relationship with Fujian province, and so a number of students from Fujian have come to Oregon and stayed and gotten degrees and good jobs, and now have gone back on Oregon sister state delegations to Fujian. And I think they probably, because of the communication, because of the their own links and ties, probably have quite a strong influence ways of at least provoking thought on the part of officials in China that even returned students perhaps don't have, because they are perceived as having the power of being Chinese-American almost at this point. Not quite, but...
Well, the next area I wanted to ask about was sort of the business-to-business connections between the U.S. and China. And really what I want to know is your feeling on how far these relationships can go. China continues to loosen up a little economically. How far can they go, given the Chinese leadership at this time, and U.S. Mixed feelings about China? Every year we debate most favored nation status, and so the relationship is a little bit unstable. How far can U.S.-Chinese business partnerships go, given that climate? Can they continue to grow effortlessly and endlessly, or is there a limit? Does anyone have a feeling on that?
Well, I think that it will grow. I mean, I would say that like this is right now, the Chinese government, as in all level, is interested to get foreign investment into their infrastructures. I mean, in fact, I just went to China to explore this possibility. I know the American business interests, financial interests, is very much interested in this type of business. Right now is that I was talking about the China International Trust and Investment Corporation. They, in July, they sold, they was going to sell $150 million of bond in this country. But it turned out that the demand was so much that they had demand over $400 million. And they had to settle a $250 million of bond. It basically is that, first of all, their constraint is that they cannot get the government approval to buy, to sell that much bond. But on the other hand, is that this indicated that in the American business atmosphere, they are very much interested in that type of bond. I mean, I think it's that, so on the hand is that I have talked with never a concern like Bear Stearns, Merrill Lynch, and these big financial corporations. They are interested to explore the possibility to make investment in Chinese power plant and toll highways. I mean, these are the sort of, I mean, this is more or less a long-term investment. This indicated that to me, there are strong interests in this country. Of course, on the hand, it's that same thing the people in Europe is also aiming at this market. And I think so it will continue. But whether we will continue, how fast continue, of course, politics will have play a role in the thing. But I think the business interest definitely is going to continue.
Mr. Yu, you obviously have a lot of contact with people interested in doing business in China. Do you sense some hesitancy on their part about how far they can go?
The surprising thing at this moment, I see no hesitancy. Whether we talk about McDonnell or Douglas, putting together aircrafts in Shanghai, or the Motorola company that has a big plant in Tianjin that makes cellular phones and pager, whether we talk about Sara Lee, who makes garments, or as the recently announced Coca-Cola plan to build 10 more plants in China. Across the board, I see great enthusiasm. I see great confidence in China's further progression in terms of economic growth. And I see this across the board. I have people coming to me almost every week asking me, what is the political situation in China? And though nobody can see clearly through one's crystal ball these days, I think by and large everybody agrees that China is not going to turn back. At least the business community seemingly has made that decision, and they are going straight ahead with their plans for expansion, if they're already there, if they aren't there, for initial investments. And so we have become, the United States, the fourth largest investors in China by the end of last year. And I see nothing but a continued upward trend.
Okay. One last question, and I'll start with you, Ms. Larson, and that is, can the society-to-society relationships continue? Well, clearly they can continue, but can they deepen as long as there's a non-democratic regime in China? Or is there some limit placed on those relationships because of that?
Boy. I frankly, in my work, the government plays some role, but relatively little, in fact. A lot of what we do is with the provincial government of Fujian in terms of people-to-people and exchange. Whether it's democratic or non-democratic seems to have little effect. We also operate more and more on a private level, with individuals, and of course all of the really effective exchanges are started by individuals who make contact with individuals, get excited about a project and carry it out. We've had exchanges relating to children's art. We're sending all these library books to China, now we're going to be receiving private entrepreneurs from Fujian who want to learn about Western business practices. And this is being initiated actually by the provincial government of Fujian, not by us. Politics is very important, I think, and the facts that things, I think the control of the central government over the provinces is loosened. The control of the provincial government over the people is loosened, or at least people pay less attention to it. Maybe that's the whole issue since Tiananmen. And so, therefore, a lot of things can happen in spite of fairly rigid government practices.
All right. We have just a few seconds left.
Well, I feel that I agree with Ms. Larson here. I mean, I think it's that this will go on more and more. I think the critical problem is that whether our two governments can have a good relationship. I think this is going to be, I mean, if there are going to be some setback, this definitely going to affect the thing. But it's going to slow it up, but it's going to continue, but it's going to grow at a slower pace.
All right. Mr. Yu, I'll give you the final word.
I think there can be no disagreement that U.S.-Chinese relations at the government level has not been at its very best. But both parties realize that improvement is needed. So I am very upbeat about the future.
That is George Yu. He's director of the Center for East Asian and Pacific Studies at the University of Illinois. Our other guests have been Jane Lung Larson, Executive Director of the Northwest Regional China Council, and Kung Lee Wong, founder of the Organization of Chinese Americans and the Committee of 100. I'm Keith Porter. To order a cassette of this Common Ground program on China and America, call toll-free 1-800-767-1929. Ask for program number 9352. That's program number 9352. Visa and MasterCard are accepted. If you'd like more information about the Stanley Foundation or you have some comment about the program, please write to us at 216 Sycamore Street, Muscatine, Iowa, 52761. However, to order cassettes, please use our toll-free number, 1-800-767-1929. Our theme music was created by B.J. Lederman. Common Ground was produced and funded by the Stanley Foundation.